Hi, and welcome to the Norwalk Hour for Wednesday, May 1st. I'm Brian Burgess, and we'll start with a front page article headlined, Protest Camps at Yale, UConn Are Removed by Campus Police. This article by Peter Yankowski, Jessica Bravo, Eric Bedner, and Cassandra Day. Police on Tuesday morning moved in to remove pro-Palestinian protest encampments at Yale University and the University of Connecticut. An encampment at Wesleyan University's Middletown campus remained on Tuesday morning and appeared to have grown in size while remaining peaceful. At UConn's campus in Storrs, the encampment at Dove Tower that had been in place since Thursday was forcibly removed by police, and several students were arrested for disobeying orders to vacate the area. Some of the student protesters threatened to disrupt graduation ceremonies if their demands were not met. At Yale, police similarly ordered protesters out of an encampment on the quad in front of the Sterling Memorial Library, an area known as Cross Campus. The action was the second time the Yale police have taken down a protest encampment after similarly moving in a tent protest at a nearby plaza early last week. Yale officials said the protesters left and that no new arrests were made. A UConn spokesperson said the school's officials did not coordinate with Yale. Protesting UConn students said police threw away food, medical supplies, personal items, cleaning supplies, and sleeping bags. Munib Sieb, a junior who has been at the encampment since it began, said roughly 50 students were there when police arrived at around 5 a.m. on Tuesday. By 7 a.m., Sieb said, police were telling students to leave the area or risk being arrested. Despite the encampment being torn down Tuesday morning, this certainly is by no means an end to it, Sieb said. Students viewed police from a short distance as law enforcement stood as a human fence to keep them away. Several protesters were chanting, Free Palestine, and shouting obscenities at police while officers were dismantling the encampment. Stephanie Wrights, a UConn spokesperson, said officers were working to put an end to encampments after protesters received several warnings. She said university officials 4 days ago reminded students of campus outdoor gathering guidelines. Wrights said that there would be an update on the number of students arrested later on Tuesday. At Wesleyan Tuesday morning, a protest encampment had doubled in size since Monday, according to organizer Rowan Rudbush. But the mood there was calm and without the confrontation with authorities seen at UConn and Yale. Protesters said there had been no arrests or confrontations with authorities since they put up the encampment. Wesleyan President Michael Roth on Tuesday morning walked through the area by the student center where the tents were set up. He was smiling and didn't engage anyone in conversation. Amira Pirati was one of the students involved in the protest. This is a moment where we are all learning to grow as a campus, Pirati said. It is wonderful to see folks coming together, having some difficult conversations. A handful of counter-protesters had stopped by a couple of times, Pirati added. Since the protests began, some 10 professors have moved their classes outdoors and taught near the tents. There were also students teaching one another, Pirati said. We're hopeful to engage folks in conversation to educate people. Conversations and other education is intended to help people understand what's going on in Gaza and what's been happening in the Palestinian territories since 1917 and before. We're uplifting the incredible legacy and lives of Palestinian people who are facing the most horrific thing we've seen in decades. It's oriented towards strengthening our movement internally and clarifying that we are not settling for anything less than divestment and disclosure, Rudbush said. In New Haven, Yale protesters at an encampment in front of the school's Sterling Memorial Library were awoken by police during the early morning hours, according to Chisato Kimura, one of the student protesters. No new arrests of protesters were made at Yale on Tuesday morning. A statement issued by the university Tuesday morning said school officials issued final warnings to protesters at the encampment that they must end it or face discipline, including suspension for violating university rules and arrest for trespassing. The statement said protesters left the encampment. Protesters had erected tents at the site Sunday afternoon at Cross Campus, according to Yale. Kimura said that no arrests were made, but that students were threatened with emergency suspension and arrest if they did not leave. "This is a college campus. We're peacefully protesting on our college campus. This is their response to that," said Kimura. More than 1,000 attendees joined a peaceful march organized by several Connecticut pro-Palestinian organizations on Sunday in downtown New Haven. This came after Yale students began demonstrations on their campus to pressure school officials to divest of holdings in weapons manufacturing companies contributing to Israel. The Yale's Advisory Committee on Investor Responsibility has since responded and stated that the university would not divest. The UConn protesters' demands include disclosure of all the university's investments, severing ties with all war-related industries and companies, including Pratt & Whitney, Lockheed Martin, and Raytheon Technologies, severing ties with Israel, including study abroad programs, and implementing a more universal enforcement policy for anti-Arabic, anti-Palestinian, and anti-Black incidents. Organizers updated their demands over the weekend to include amnesty for those engaged in pro-Palestinian events on campus. Also on today's front page, Lamont is mum on trees with the chamber. This article by Alexander Soule. With a quip here and there, but nothing along the lines of, "If a tree fell in a forest," Governor Ned Lamont on Monday night appeared in Norwalk as he makes the statewide rounds pressing his legislative agenda in the closing days of the 2024 session of the Connecticut General Assembly. Lamont spoke Monday night at the annual meeting of the Greater Norwalk Chamber of Commerce at the Shore and Country Club in East Norwalk, overlooking Long Island Sound. The governor was also scheduled Tuesday to attend a luncheon hosted by the Chamber of Commerce of Eastern Connecticut. The governor made no mention of the Treegate brouhaha after taking responsibility earlier in the day for hiring a company that cut down about 180 trees on his residential property in Greenwich without first getting necessary town approval. A Greenwich neighbor complained that Lamont's arborists felled trees on their adjoining property as well. The Connecticut General Assembly faces a May 8th deadline to make any changes to the $51 billion biennium budget adopted last year and approved any other pieces of legislation for the governor's consideration. New York State is underwater. Massachusetts raised taxes. They're underwater on their state budget, Lamont told members of the Greater Norwalk Chamber of Commerce on Monday night. "We're not above water by much, but we're above water, and this will be the sixth budget in a row that we've had a balanced budget. And I think that sends a message," Lamont noted that pension debt continues to hang over Connecticut, despite the state having paid down $9 billion of it. Connecticut had the highest unfunded pension debt on a per capita basis in the Northeast, and fifth highest among the 50 states, he said, basing his numbers on an analysis last September by the American Legislative Exchange Council. Lamont said that he expects the legislature to adhere to fiscal guardrails put in place in 2017 and renewed last year, which are designed to ensure a 1.25% surplus. But House Speaker Matt Ritter of Hartford said earlier in the session that the newer agreement provides upward flexibility against that cap in the second year of the biennium. Connecticut has restored its rainy day fund to $3.5 billion, which Lamont said could provide fiscal relief in any unexpected decline in state revenue collections. State Senate Majority Leader Bob Duff of Norwalk said Monday that he's confident legislative leaders will produce a budget Lamont can sign by the May 8th deadline. "It's going to help our communities," he said, rattling off several positives, including the University of Connecticut Huskies basketball teams keeping Connecticut in the national headlines this past winter and spring. Lamont cited the cost of housing as the state's biggest continuing challenge, despite the ongoing apartment construction boom in cities like Norwalk. "Housing's a little tricky in a state like Connecticut," Lamont said. "We've got to take an old factory, we've got to convert it and clean it up, and then bring our towns and cities back to life. and I'd like to think that's what we're doing. Norwalk has seen multiple big commercial developments in the past several years as well, from the 2019 opening of the Sono Collection Mall to construction now underway for the first Wegmans supermarket in the state, sandwiched between Interstate 95 and Connecticut Avenue. Mayor Harry Rilling said empty office buildings represent another candidate to add to the city's apartment stock, though there are challenges in redesigning plumbing and other building systems to accommodate residential living. I've talked a lot to the building owners, and they have to think creatively and start talking about repurposing, Rilling said. Duff said that Norwalk has been among municipalities statewide to make it easier for homeowners to build accessory apartments with an extra kitchen and bathroom, allowing elder residents to save money by living with their children. And in another front page article by Colleen Rose Ozanek, a $1.4 million home is now in place of a raised historic house. In the 2 years since the city accused the owners of 21 Willow Street of the illegal demolition of the Thomas Hyatt House, a new $1.4 million home has been constructed on the 345-year-old structure's bones. The new four-bed, five-bath, 4,524-square-foot property has a tall chimney reminiscent of the structure that once stood prominent in the Hyatt House, according to a Zillow listing. Property owners Cesar Diaz and Kembury Mora could not be reached for comment on the property or to confirm if the original chimney remained. Karina Caballeros, the William Ravis real estate agent who listed the property on Zillow, said she could not comment on the property and directed Hearst Connecticut Media Group to David Wilk, strategic growth and sales manager at the Greenwich William Ravis office. "It's a nice new home," Wilk said on Monday. "We have no comment on the situation or knowledge of what went on prior to us representing the seller." The city of Norwalk maintained in 2022 that the property was demolished without permit. Contractors were permitted on October 21, 2022, to construct a second-floor addition over existing footprint. Complete renovations to the first-floor kitchen, laundry, and bathroom, including electric, heating, ventilation, air conditioning, and plumbing, according to the permit. "I am disgusted by this contractor's actions and want to ensure he knows that when someone violates the city's requirements to issue a demolition permit or get a proper demolition license, there are consequences," Mayor Harry Rilling said in a statement in 2022. "What he's taken from us was more than just a building. It was an integral part of Norwalk's history." Rilling and the city declined to comment on the new build, according to Michelle Woods Matthews, communication director for the mayor's office. In 2022, Diaz said he did not know the 21 Willow Street property was historic and believed he had the correct permits. "They're blaming me, and that's not what's going on here," Diaz said. "It's not like I've been in this for years and years. This is not what I do for a living. I went to get help from City Hall because they're there to walk you through it. I provided everything I had to." The Thomas Hyatt House, a 1677 saltbox-style build, was constructed after Hyatt was given 8 acres of land for his service in King Philip's War, where New England colonists battled Native Americans. The home is one of many structures that are part of Norwalk's Historical Society's Building Plaque Program. While part of the plaque program, 21 Willow Street was not listed on the National Register of Historic Places, nor was it in 2022 when the Hyatt House was demolished, according to President of the Norwalk Preservation Trust, Todd Bryant. While the then 345-year-old house was not a registered historic site, Bryant and the Trust assumed that it was, he said. "I searched every database I have, which I think is pretty much all of them," Bryant said in 2022. "I don't know why I never checked. When you're looking at something from 1677 and well-documented, you assume." Bryan said that he's worried that a new build on the historic property would encourage developers to improperly build on Norwalk's historic properties. "It, the new build, should never have been allowed to happen," Bryan said Monday, noting that Norwalk's regulations should take a page out of some Massachusetts towns' books by disincentivizing work on historic sites. For instance, some towns in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, provide for 6, 12, and 18-month demolition delays that allow communities to find alternatives to razing historic sites. In a front-page article by Liz Hardaway, police say a domestic issue led to a swatting call. A Pennsylvania man is accused of calling police about a fake hostage situation to try to get revenge on someone he previously dated, according to his arrest warrant affidavit. Maurice Smith called police on March 17th, reporting that a woman was being held hostage, his arrest warrant said. However, the woman did not exist, police wrote in the warrant. The police investigation determined that Smith and the other person got into an argument the previous night, the warrant said. Over the text and emails, Smith told the person that he wasn't going to stop until the victim was dead or in jail. Smith of Philadelphia is charged with first-degree false incident report, second-degree breach of peace, and risk of injury to a child. During his arraignment on Thursday in State Superior Court in Stamford, Judge Alex Hernandez set Smith's bond at $50,000 and imposed a protective order, according to court documents. According to the warrant, an operator from the New York Police Department called Norwalk Police around 8:20 a.m. on March 17th, stating that they received a call from a man who called himself Thomas Smith. The man, later identified as Maurice Smith, said he received a message from a woman who said her boyfriend was holding her at gunpoint and requested police respond to a home on Devil's Garden Road in Norwalk, according to the warrant. After the call, Norwalk police dispatched 7 patrol officers and 1 sergeant to the home and set up a perimeter. As they surrounded the home, officers, some equipped with long guns, used a patrol's vehicle PA system to call out the name of the boyfriend. A man, later identified as someone Smith previously dated, then stepped out of the home and cooperated with officers' commands to lie on the ground. Officers then handcuffed him, police wrote in the warrant. Officers wearing body cameras went inside the home and saw 2 boys, ages 13 and 5, and the homeowner. Police said they did not find anyone else in the home, nor any firearms. The homeowner was visibly shaken and shocked as he was interviewed by police, telling them the victim was his longtime friend who was visiting for the weekend. He added that there were no women in the home and none had come by recently, according to the warrant. Police then determined the call had been part of a swatting incident in which a false report is made to emergency services about another person, resulting in an armed response. Officers then spoke to the man who the caller had said was holding a woman at gunpoint. The man told officers Smith was harassing him and threatening him. The man claimed that the woman Smith alleged was being held at gunpoint did not exist, the warrant said. Police reviewed text messages between the man and Smith that showed they clearly had an argument. Throughout the conversation, Smith told the man that he was going to get it and that he would be going to jail and getting shot at, the warrant stated. Also in Norwalk, DEA agents and Norwalk police perform a search. This article also by Liz Hardaway. Federal law enforcement officers were in Norwalk on Monday morning in connection with an investigation, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Connecticut confirmed on Tuesday. Agents with the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration were seen on Marlin Drive at around 6 a.m. Monday. The U.S. Attorney's Office said the move was in connection with an investigation in Darien. Darien police said to officers, along with agents from the DEA and officers from the Norwalk and Stamford police departments, executed a successful search and arrest warrant in the early morning hours on Monday. The warrant was the culmination of an extensive and collaborative investigation and targeted a residence on Pinebrook Lane, according to Darien Police Sergeant Dan Skombros. It is imperative to assure the public that there is no imminent danger or threat posed to the community, Skombros said. Given the sensitivity and ongoing nature of the investigation, further details are withheld at this time. Norwalk police confirmed that they had provided assistance, but said they would not be releasing any further information. Norwalk and Darien police referred further inquiries to the DEA, which referred inquiries to the U.S. Attorney's Office. No further information was immediately available. In New Canaan, St. Luke's and the neighbors are at odds on parking. This front page article by Molly Hirsch. After months of debates between a private school hoping to restore its sinking football field and its neighbors, New Canaan's Planning and Zoning Commission is looking to find some sort of compromise. Or, as member Arthur Cassavant said, something that would make everybody equally unhappy. St. Luke's School is proposing creating a ground-level parking lot and elevating its existing football field to sit on top in the hopes of simultaneously solving traffic issues and fixing its sinking field. However, the unconventional structure has stirred controversy with neighbors concerned about potential negative effects on the environment and a precedent that could allow similar structures in other neighborhoods. With deliberations kicking off on April 24th, members of the commission have already proposed several conditions intended to mitigate traffic, capacity, and neighborhood environmental concerns. According to the school's Board of Trustees, Chairman Christopher Rosso, the school's Watson Field, installed in 2005, has deteriorated beyond its 15-year life expectancy. Sinkholes have appeared since 2020 as the underlying layer beneath the turf decomposes. That was the eureka moment, Rosso told the commissioner in December. Not only could we use the space created under the field to solve for an existing shortfall of parking spaces on campus, we could also resolve the traffic backups on North Wilton Road. Since then, the school has found itself in a months-long back and forth with neighbors. Some neighbors have placed signs on their lawns decrying the school's plans. Others say they feel those behind the project don't live in town, so don't care about its effects on the neighborhood or the town at large. Rosso accused some of fear-mongering during the final public hearing on March 26th. One neighbor, Sarah Pierce, is attempting to fight the application as a third party. She says she can prove substantial environmental consequences if the plan goes ahead. So far, the Inland Wetlands Commission has ruled against Pierce's claims, and the Planning and Zoning Commission leaning in the same direction as of April 24th. Planning and Zoning Chair Dan Radman said traffic on North Wilton Road has been the biggest issue neighbors have with St. Luke's applications for over a decade. As part of the application, St. Luke's proposed a new queuing system for school drop-off and pickup through the new parking structure, which they claimed will eliminate the backup of cars on North Wilton Road. Radman commended the school for finding a solution to the traffic backups, saying, "Being able to get that traffic off the road is a huge benefit, provided it does work as efficiently as they are describing." However, several commission members were skeptical about whether adding more parking would ease traffic on the road. Though he called it a clever design, commission member Alan Swerdlow said adding more parking felt more like a prescription for future growth and not a reconfiguration to improve current conditions. "There are going to be bottlenecks no matter how much parking you provide," Swerdlow said. "I see this as probably worsening or increasing, my opinion only, the traffic in the surrounding neighborhood." Associate Head of School and Chief Financial Officer Julia Gabriel from St. Luke's declined to comment on the meeting for this story. The commission is expected to review draft resolutions and further deliberate on May 28th. In Greenwich, a leukemia patient, 3 years old, is a champion for Sunday's 5K cancer fundraiser. At just 18 months old, Camilla Ginnan was diagnosed with leukemia. Right after her diagnosis, Camilla and her mother spent 8 days at Yale New Haven's Children's Hospital. "It was crazy," said Martha Kuchimbo, Camilla's mom. In a statement, "I was lost and I didn't know what to do." Camilla's initial chemotherapy treatment took 6 months, which was one-third of her life so far, according to the statement. Camilla went through 2 rounds of an immunotherapy that takes immune cells and re-engineers them to attack cancer cells, which can help lower the risk of a relapse. By December 1st, 2022, Camilla's cancer was officially in remission, and she was able to return home to Greenwich. "I'm amazed at how strong and brave she is," Kuchimbo said in a statement. The now 3-year-old is doing her best to return to a normal life. Quichimbo said that she didn't have to bear the stress alone. During her treatment, Circle of Care helped out Camilla's family financially. Circle of Care is a Connecticut-based nonprofit that supports families with children who are diagnosed with cancer. The organization has chosen Camilla as the face of its next fundraising effort. She is the champion of the 10th annual Care to Run and Walk 5K, set for 9 a.m. on Sunday at Merwin Meadows Park in Wilton. The 5K, which welcomes runners, walkers, and those who just want to support local families, has become a staple in Fairfield County, bringing together participants of all ages to show support for children and families facing the challenges of childhood cancer. A statement announcing the fundraiser said, "This year, the 5K will feature a DJ, cheering stations, and an inspiration wall for participants to share their reason for supporting and a photo station to help commemorate the event," according to the release. After the race, there will be a tailgate event with food, drinks, and activities for kids and adults. Up in Hartford, the State House approves enhanced aging-in-place regulations. This article by Ken Dixon. In an attempt to help elders stay in their homes while saving the state money, the House of Representatives on Monday overwhelmingly approved legislation that requires agencies employing home health aides and home care professionals to provide better training on recognizing and responding to harassment, abuse, and discrimination. The wide-ranging legislation, given a top priority this year by majority Democrats who labeled it HB 5001, passed 143-3. If ratified in the Senate and signed into law by the governor, the new law would require all home health care attendants, home health aides, homemaker companions, and hospice agencies to supply employees with identification badges that include names and photographs to be displayed during each client appointment. The consumer-oriented centerpiece of the bill for the 800,000 state residents 60 years of age or older would be an online nursing home consumer dashboard. It would go live on the state public health department's website this summer and provide detailed information on quality of care in the state's nursing home industry, where about 20,000 people reside, and display leading industry practices. "The urgency is real," said Representative Jane Garibay of Windsor, co-chairman of the Committee on Aging, noting that 23% of the state population would be affected. She said that the bipartisan bill was drafted with input from state agencies and nursing homes. "This has the potential to reshape public policy on aging for our state. It also includes a regulatory presumption of Medicaid eligibility and further federal funding for people who remain in their homes but need outside help. That, in my opinion, is everything that we've been working on for years for aging in place," said Representative Mitch Belinsky of Newtown, a ranking Republican on the Committee on Aging. Garibay said that some of the state's remaining pandemic relief funds would be used to start up the program. "Even in year one, we believe there will be savings to this bill," Garibay said, noting that tens of millions of dollars has been saved by other states that have adopted the model. People will be able to have home care. They will be presumed eligible. During a pre-session briefing with Capitol reporters, Speaker of the House Matt Ritter of Hartford brought in a bipartisan group of lawmakers who worked on the bill, which would make it mandatory for local agents caring for elders to make their clients aware of services and resources and help them search for housing opportunities, waiting lists, and consumer reports. It would also make it easier for home health care workers to get fingerprinted as part of their background checks. Finally today, in Life Tributes, Fergus Reed IV of Wilton passed away peacefully on April 26th. And that is all the time we have for today. I'm Brian Burgess, and you've been listening to the Wednesday, May 1st edition of the Norwalk Hour. Thank you for listening. Have a great day.